comes, which means it's time for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Natural Nurse has the day off, and this is Dr. Z joining you after a hiatus teaching. Welcome, and hopefully you'll learn stuff about health, wellness, and alternative medicine today. And remember, you can always visit our websites, naturalnurse.com, or, of course, drznaturally.com. We have our Jamaica trip that we're getting ready for in March. You can find out more information about that. And really excited to have a new friend on that I met at a conference a couple months ago. And her name's Carol Peterson. And we're going to be talking about sort of the physiology of hormones and everything you wanted to know about hormones, but you were afraid to ask. And particularly out of the box understanding of the role of hormones and how they're used for things that we don't even think are hormonally related, like, for instance, pain, memory, inflammation, and a whole myriad of other factors. So Carol is an accomplished compounding pharmacist. She has decades of experience helping patients improve the quality of life through using bioidentical hormones. And she works at Women's International Pharmacy and graduated from University of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy and also has certification as a nutritional practitioner. She lectures all over the place with quite the eruditeness on compounding special interests and using hormones for things. And I remember listening to her lecture, and I was saying, wow, yeah, I use hormones like that, and most people don't know those types of things. So I found, and then we ended up having dinner together, and that's how I met Carol. So welcome, Carol.
Well, thank you, Dr. Z. I'm so delighted to be here.
Yeah.
One of the reviewers said of my talk was I covered so many things superficially of things people didn't think about what hormones did. So I'm really pleased. It was the role of hormones in pain is really a big topic, and it sort of corresponds to what you were talking about herbal products for pain. So there's a nice intersection there.
Yeah.
So I am pleased to be discussing this with you today.
Excellent, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the physiology of hormones for a second here, because most people think, hormones are used for hot flashes and maybe osteoporosis in women, and guys don't even think about hormones unless they're weightlifting and trying to take testosterone. So most of our listeners' knowledge of hormones is extremely, extremely limited. So let's open them up.
Okay. I would love to do that. Let's just go in relationship to testosterone. And we've done a lot with testosterone in men. There are several FDA-approved products to increase testosterone in men. However, women have been entirely ignored. And testosterone is an extremely important hormone. It is responsible for all protein metabolism in the human body. It's the hormone director. All hormones are directors. And if you don't pay attention to that element of what's going on in your body, you're not going to understand how hormones work or how hormones can be a benefit. As far as pain, let's discuss where it intersects with pain. If you have any damage to your body, you need that hormone director to restore your body. So any kind of tissue issues, damaged tissues, damaged nerves, all sorts of injuries and trauma, that testosterone piece needs to be there in order to restore your body. So it's a hugely important hormone. And I would say as we age, that hormone's going down more and more. And a big problem with elderly is they don't have enough of that tissue regeneration, and they're even more prone to injury and damage to their body, and they're just falling apart. But having said that, often in chronic pain, people become reliant on opiates, the opium-derived drugs, to help them. And there's a vicious cycle that happens with testosterone. When your testosterone levels are good and adequate, you don't feel pain as severely. When testosterone is depleted, you feel pain a whole lot more. So enter in the opium-derived drugs, and on several levels, they actually interfere with your testosterone production. So in the brain, we have a gland called the hypothalamus, and then it directs the pituitary, and then the pituitary directs production of thyroid hormones, sex hormones, of which testosterone is one, and also we get a little testosterone from our adrenal glands. All of this comes from the brain, and the opium-derived drugs actually interfere with the working of the hypothalamus. So the more you use those drugs for pain relief, the more you drive down testosterone, the more pain you feel. And it sort of is a pretty darn good explanation why people seem to need more and more and more pain relief as time goes on, because they're actually becoming more and more deficient in testosterone.
Could that be why they see, there seems to be like a wasting syndrome too with opioids, besides, you know, it affecting their behavior to eat and things like that?
Oh, absolutely. And additionally, it's been hypothesized that that testosterone production is also interfered with at the adrenals, and again at the testes and ovaries in women directly. So there's like three ways that it's interfering. And then when it's also low, you have this perception of pain is much higher, and you also are deprived of that hormone signaling to rebuild your body, restore your body, whatever it is that's causing the pain in the first place. You don't have the tools to replenish.
So why are some reasons, or what are some reasons why people's testosterone goes down, besides attributing it to just the normal aging process? There are probably a myriad of things that sort of reduce it.
One of the biggest ones is cortisol. So let me back up a minute and explain where that comes from. People know hydrocortisone. You can go to your pharmacy and buy a 1% hydrocortisone cream. Everybody can do that. And it is out there to reduce inflammation. It's there in the foot section. It's there in the first aid section. It's all over the place. Hydrocortisone is a pretty important anti-inflammatory. And it's one of the major hormones that your adrenal glands put out. However, cortisone or hydrocortisone, that you can use those terms interchangeably, too little makes you very prone to inflammation, too much, and cortisol has been nicknamed the death hormone. When it's too much, a lot of processes stop in your body, and one of the major declines in testosterone is when cortisol has gone too high. So why does cortisol go high? It goes high when you are overstressed. Now, one of the important things, and those people who do experience chronic pain, they will tell you that the effect of chronic pain is exhausting. And your body, for a long time, puts out as much cortisol as it can, and excessively slow, and driving down other hormones in this process. But then, as time goes on, that cortisol level just drops and drops and drops and becomes abnormally low. Now you're in the situation where you're in pain and you have no energy. You can hardly move, extremely fatigued. Now we're talking about where you might be in the situation like chronic fatigue manifests like that. Very, very, very low levels of cortisol. And then also fibromyalgia is in this group too, where you have all these unknown, strange, moving pains all tied up with a very low hydrocortisone level. So that the key there is to eliminate stress as you can, and any stressor would do it, chronic relationship problems, chronic financial problems can really cause high cortisol and then knock out all the benefits of testosterone.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I'll tell you another thing we should be really, really aware of. The drug class that everybody's been encouraged to take, like we should have it in our water or something, are the statin drugs. Those drugs that lower cholesterol. Guess what? When you lower your cholesterol, you're going to lower particularly the sex and adrenal hormones. And people on statin drugs will start to become deficient in things like testosterone, DHEA, which is also from the adrenals, which is another very helpful hormone for rebuilding, and all your sex hormones, all your pleasure in life is just gone with driving down cholesterol and driving down your other hormones.
Wow, that's really interesting, because so many people are... I've always, you know, years ago, Ellen and I wrote an article called The Cholesterol Mythology, talked about that, you know, cholesterol is like a very important hormone. It's involved in repair. It's involved in the vitamin D synthesis. It's involved in hormone synthesis. And there would have to, and of course, you know, it repairs the arteries from inflammation. So there has to be a good reason to be making it when it's high. And medicine and its short-sightedness has just slapped a duct tape solution on things, take statins.
Right, and it's really causes some huge, huge problems. And one of the things we don't look at, when somebody presents with high cholesterol, that is a symptom. It's not a disease. Mm-hmm. And many things can be causing your cholesterol to be high at that moment. One of them is the repair that's needed, as you just spoke about. Pregnant women have very high cholesterol, by the way, because they're making tons of new cells with that infant, so they really need it. High cholesterol also occurs when the sex and adrenal hormones are deficient, so your body gears up to make more. The cholesterol also goes up when you don't have enough thyroid. Let me explain this. So the next hormone from cholesterol is pregnenolone. In order to make that particular shift to pregnenolone and then to all these sex and adrenal hormones, you need active vitamin A. We eat a lot of vitamin A precursors in our fruits and vegetables called beta-carotene. But if we don't have thyroid, active thyroid, we can't change those beta carotenes into active vitamin A, which is required in that step. So when people's thyroid activity is low, one of the things they could do to bypass this a little bit is make sure they have active vitamin A, like in cod liver oil, for example, but better yet, fix the thyroid.
Yes, that's interesting.
Now, thyroid has a function in every single cell in your body. It controls your metabolism. One of the places it does is in your mitochondria. This is an organelle inside the cell, and it's responsible for producing energy in each and every cell in your body, and it's responsible for your use of oxygen to produce energy. Without that oxygen production, your body becomes less and less vital. Our cells and our whole body need active thyroid, need oxygen. So we start to see things not working so well. So our digestive tract slows down. We lose hair. Our skin is pale because we can't get circulation to our skin surface. We put on unnecessary weight. We have no energy. And one of the things that thyroid, low thyroid, can actually cause is strange pains. Pains that doctors will have a hard time diagnosing. And again, fibromyalgia comes to mind. If you're not getting enough cellular energy, not producing enough oxygen, there's going to be pain.
Yeah, that's we see that all the time. Yeah. And you know, I guess sometimes measuring the hormones, you know, the thyroid hormones, it sometimes doesn't even lead you to a true diagnosis of hypothyroidism. I've seen, you know, I do like to take people's temperature. You know, I try to follow Dr. Wilson's advice sometimes. You do have some folks that fall into that, you know, category. And then the effect of cortisol on the thyroid is very interesting, too. There's kind of a yin and yang effect on the cortisol, you were saying, in the thyroid, too. So there's reasons, there's even reasons for why the thyroid could be low.
That's right. You need that cortisol. It's a very good point. Too low cortisol, you don't convert thyroid. Your thyroid gland puts out both a fairly inactive T4 and very active T3. T4 is converted to T3. Cortisol has to be there for that conversion. So if that's low, you're not converting. On the other hand, you're going to inhibit that conversion if the cortisol's too high.
Mm. So it's like a Goldilocks thing. Just right.
Yes, just right. And that's, you know, that's really true. I think many of the situations that we look at, doctors aren't trained for finding that Goldilocks. I know when we go to complementary medical conferences, sometimes speakers are referring to tests that we see and use all the time, and they will say, what are the optimal ranges that they want for this test? And the range a lab gives you will be very, very much wider, but there is a best place to be. And conventional doctors tend to look at that range and say, oh, you're just fine. Your test is just fine. You can be looking at a patient in front of you who's falling apart, but your test is fine. But it's not fine. You might be at one of the two ends in just a slight number different, and you'd be off. And then even some physicians and practitioners will dismiss the fact that you fell off the range, saying, oh, well, that's not too bad. And I'd like to just comment, like, the very common test for thyroid, most practitioners are only using TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone, which is produced by the pituitary. And the range on that test is something like 0.032. Used to be 5, now it's 3.5. Some labs haven't even adjusted. There's a huge range. And in all my years of looking at this, just this one test, I'm already feeling if you're not close to one, there is something off.
Yeah, but I would totally agree.
As you mentioned before, there's other parameters. Dr. Wilson talks about reverse T3, which your body can convert from the T4 inactive, and it further decreases your metabolism, and how do you get that turned back on? And a huge, huge number of the population have autoimmune thyroid diseases, and we're not checking for the antibodies routinely. So how can you state, oh, so many people have Hashimoto's, this autoimmune thyroid disease, and nobody is looking to see if the antibodies are there? And you know why they're not looking? Because the conventional world doesn't know what to do with it if they're there.
That's very true.
Now, you and I have some very good ideas. Any autoimmune disease is really gut-related. You have issues going on in your gut, causing your body to absorb toxins, which in turn are similar enough to your own tissue, and your body inadvertently starts to react against your own tissue. So for naturopaths and people in the nutritional world, we know to look at the gut and start working on mending that. Conventional doctors don't have a clue.
Myself and Dr. Friedman actually developed one of the products, the T-cell balance that we have that kind of has you know, effects with cordyceps, which is a, you know, amphoteric mushroom, and Romania, which, again, Romania is a very interesting plant that it gets rid of that overstressed cortisol response. It's one of these ancient Chinese plants. And then the rosmarinic acid actually teaches, you know, re-educates some of the T cells. So anyway, yeah, that's a very interesting point. Let's talk about some outside-the-box uses of hormones in your, you know, when people call up and you prescribe these hormones or educating doctors across the country for a couple minutes, and then we'll take a break and play one of our natural medicine chess mini programs. But I know I learned a lot about this very interesting hormone in your lecture, which is called pregnenolone, which you talked about before. And when I looked it on, when I went online and looked up pregnenolone on Google Image, I saw that it was like the great grandmother of all the hormones. In other words, most of the hormones are made from pregnenolone, but it has unique effects on the brain itself.
Hugely. When you're referring to pregnenolone as a neurosteroid, all the hormones derived from cholesterol naturally are steroids. They have a certain shape to them. What most people don't know, and pregnenolone would be mainly produced by the adrenals, some from the sex organs, but people don't know that your body also produces pregnenolone with the nerve cells throughout your body. And then back to the neurosteroid, your brain produces it independently of your sex and adrenal organs. For a long, long time, I just did a little research before I got on this call, and I was reading some older stuff. For a long, long time, we thought that those hormones were only made by those organs and had to get into your brain. But no, the brain is fully outfitted to produce these hormones. And pregnenolone really is quite interesting. It's a precursor for others. One of its derivatives, pregnenolone, is one of the most powerful brain chemicals, most soothing. But it's got independently, it helps you with concentration and focus. Mm. And it's a very powerful anti-inflammatory.
Wow. Yeah, I have a patient that's doing quite well on pregnenolone. She has a type of sarcoidosis, scleroderma, and like her inflammatory markers and even her ANA cascade type of markers have actually started the process of reversing, or at least severely going down through the use of neurosteroids. And the thing that struck me is she first came in and said, you know, I'm starting to get some memory problems. And I remember reading in your lecture talking about how pregnenolone helps with memory. And then I found all kinds of interesting articles on that in the peer-reviewed literature, that it really does help with memory. And it may be one of the things that could help people with certain types of dementia. I was fascinated by it. And it's interesting how memory goes down when people are put on statins and different drugs that maybe inhibit the production of pregnenolone, because it's the same, it's kind of like the same biochemistry that you make cholesterol with and things like that. But let's hold that thought, because I'm going to have the engineer play a program. It's right around, you know, half past the hour. So hopefully he could cue up one of our natural medicine chests. And when we return, if you're just joining us, I'm with Carol Peterson. She's an accomplished compounding pharmacist with decades of experience helping folks improve their life through hormone replacement therapy with the Women's International Pharmacy. And we're having a great conversation about things that I didn't even know. So it's great, Carol. Stay with us, and let's play that natural medicine chest, and then we'll bring you right back. So stay with us. On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
And, okay, we're back with more with Carol Peterson and talking about all things hormones and kind of out-of-the-box understandings of the roles of hormones that even your doctor doesn't know these things. And so I'm real pleased to have her on. We met at the conference, Restorative Medicine Conference, a couple months ago, and we hit it off, had dinner together, and it was just it's great to have her on. Carol, I understand you have a radio show, too.
Yes. Take Charge of Your Health at WBAI.
Wow. So maybe, yeah, that's great. That's a great New York show and fabulous. I look forward to hearing you on there. And so let's talk a little bit about some of those things that we wanted to mention. Like, okay, say somebody... Oh, before I mention that, I thought of something... When I was writing my arthritis book, I found an interesting article that many of these adrenal hormones plummet way before the patient is diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune disease. And so the researchers said, oh, maybe it was the effect of the steroids suppressing the patient's own endogenous production. But then they've said no. These low hormones are actually hallmarks of disease, and you can actually catch people way before they get disease. Talk about preventive medicine.
Right. Well, anything that's inflammatory, just like I want to remind you that 1% hydrocortisone cream in the pharmacies, some people in the pharmacy industry don't think it's worthwhile, but there's enough hydrocortisone in there to do a great deal. And there's enough, if you were to use like an eighth of a teaspoon dose 4 times a day of just that over-the-counter hydrocortisone, you'd boost yourself up to a normal level if you were low. And when you have symptoms like itching and hives and allergies and pain, these are symptoms of low hydrocortisone. One hallmark, I'm going to give you a big tip, and this is what I think everybody should pay attention to, because we have so much propaganda about flu and flu vaccines. What happens during the flu is that the signal from your pituitary, the signaling hormone is called ACTH. ACTH stimulates your adrenals to put out hydrocortisone or cortisol. And the virus, which is the culprit, actually interferes with that signaling from the pituitary. So essentially you're going into an adrenal collapse. And if you can imagine for a moment the aches and joint pains and malaise and no energy, absolutely can hardly move your body. This is what low cortisol or hydrocortisone feels like. And guess what? You could get that tube of hydrocortisone out of your medicine cabinet, slather on about a teaspoonful for your first dose, and all of that would vanish within about 20, 30 minutes.
Wow. We're going to try that for the flu. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, the virus is part of a, you know, part of the issue, and that's very naturopathic to look at the where the virus is, not the cause of the disease, but some, you know, antecedent or, you know, after effect that seems to attack weak people. So, wow, that's great. We're going to...
Right. It's
that's
magic.
Fascinating. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about guys that are trying to fight andropause and what would be the downside. Because I know there's some downsides of using testosterone. Like, for instance, you know, I had a guy come in recently, was using it, and he developed what we kind of funny call man boobs, gynecomastia. Yep. And he was concerned about it. And I said, well, maybe some of the testosterone that you're using is being converted into estrogen. And I was right. And so we gave him some herbs, and it seemed to stop that. But do you see this with some of the bioavailable testosterone that's out there?
Yes. I have a great concern about this because testosterone is widely prescribed for men, and it's a good thing. But it's being prescribed by practitioners who have no idea of balancing hormones. Mm. And testosterone really isn't a preferred hormone for the bodybuilder types because there is this tendency to convert to estrogen, and the excess estrogen in that conversion will create the man boobs. It'll create it'll feminize the body. Certainly, bodybuilders don't want that at all. So there's an imbalance going here. And you're quite right. There are a lot of herbs that can prevent excessive testosterone conversion to estrogens, and they tend to be in the polyphenols family, and resveratrol, quercetin are good. You see crisin as a potential. There's a bunch of things there that can help. However, ponder for a moment and ask what's the balancing hormone for testosterone in men?
Probably progesterone, maybe.
Oh, A++.
Yes, okay. Boy, you put me on the spot there, Professor Zamperone. My students will be listening to this, too, so study hard, folks.
Good. Wow, you passed with flying colors.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about progesterone because you talked a lot about that on the at the conference, and I was fascinated by it. Talk about it, yeah.
And I just attended a wellness conference at Cleveland Clinic, and it was a workshop for practitioners to learn about bioidentical hormone therapies and how to use them. And it was mostly women-centered, but when they ended up and had a panel, one very smart person from the audience got up and said, I measure progesterone in my male patients, and I find a lot of them are low. And guess what? That whole expert panel is stymied. Never heard of such a thing.
Mm, you did. You did, I'm sure. Yeah.
So progesterone is the natural balancer for testosterone. It's an aromatase inhibitor. It's also a 5-alpha reductase inhibitor, and people are concerned about male pattern baldness, which has been linked to dihydrotestosterone, which is really the hormone testosterone being not quite as strong. That might be another whole talk. That dihydrotestosterone being associated with male pattern baldness, it's probably a faulty theory and needs to be looked at much more closely.
I've measured it in some guys that have male pattern baldness, and I found it to be normal. I was throwing up my arms, so I find that your hypothesis is probably true, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot more to that, and actually I read an extremely good book called Hair Like a Fox, by an author named Danny Roddy, R-O-D-D-Y, and he goes through the whole history of our theories and produces another one, which goes back to something I talked about earlier, active thyroid, T3, what's happening in those cells that are losing their ability to make hair is a lack of mitochondrial activity. The mitochondria are shutting down. The cell is shutting down. And it's a symptom that's just like the canary in the coal mine. When that is happening, your whole body is suffering, but this is a very visible symptom. And what's concerning me very, very much, so as I look around, you notice the new trend in hairstyles in men is to shave off your hair. We used to have the old guys with comb overs, but now we have young men with shaved heads.
Right.
And that lack of cell energy is a problem. And those young men who are shaving their heads are going to be very prone to diabetes, prostate enlargement, prostate cancer, and about 10 years lower lifespan. Pretty shocking.
So yeah, that's kind of scary. So I think there's ways that we can we look at the hair as a prognosticator of overall health. It's not just the genetic, just don't blame it on, well, it was on my mother's father's side and blah, blah, blah. You know, so there's certainly genes involved, but there has to be, those genes have to be turned on, is what you're saying, by environmental things, you know.
Right, and that's a mistake I'm trying to allude to, as men are being recognized as they age, that their testosterone has gotten low, but we should look at the whole hormone picture, along with nutrients and lifestyle and stressors and everything else. It's when it's used as a one substance, you start to create other deficiencies and imbalances. And so testosterone really should be balanced by some progesterone. Little DHEA in there is really great too. But whatever that man needs, if he older men are going to need to be evaluated for their thyroid function and many more. So
yeah.
People should look at the whole picture. So when you start having problems with a testosterone only, where you get excessive estrogen, or another thing that happens is your blood becomes thicker, you're making more red blood cells, you are getting treated in an unbalanced fashion.
Absolutely, yeah. We need to look at these things. So talk about some of the other very interesting things with progesterone. And here's a question. Can you take pregnenolone, which is a direct, like it could go to the progesterone pathway, or you think that you should actually just take the progesterone itself? I was just curious about that.
It could go either way, and some people have said you could, well, just throw in pregnenolone and you'll get all the downline hormones, or you could say the same of cholesterol, just make sure the cholesterol is adequate and you'll have all the downline hormones. However, between each step in making each hormone is a cofactor, which is a mineral, and a coenzyme, which is a vitamin. And so it's very much dependent on that nutrition being there, and magnesium and zinc are big cofactors for this whole process. B6, B3 are big coenzymes for this process. If those aren't adequately there, you're going to have a problem moving from one hormone to another. So given what's going on with the individual, the answer to that question is yes or no, depending on the individual. Pregnenolone might suit, it might not.
So run these levels of nutrients. I like to do the red blood cell levels so I could see what's actually in the cells. A lot of people just check
the red blood
cell serum.
Nutrients. Yep.
Yeah, that's how we were trained in naturopathic school, is to try to look at what's inside the cell when you can, because some people, you know, I know with thyroid hormone and a lot of hormones, they can't, you know, like you can't get the thyroid hormone in the cell in some cases I've seen. Like the cell becomes not permeable. So that's a whole other issue, which is interesting, because that I've seen that in patients with a lot of copper and not a lot of zinc. So copper can act like an anti-hormone by stopping the, paralyzing the sodium, potassium, ATPase pumps and calcium channels and things like that. So anyway, I had a nice long talk with Dr. Wilson about that, this conference. Tell us a little bit about progesterone and what else it can do. So we know it balances testosterone. What are some other effects of it?
Oh, it can, if you want to stick to men for a minute, it can prevent or treat prostatic hypertrophy. It can improve sleep. It can improve mood. One of the things that I also did talk about is that progesterone is the balancing hormone for excess adrenaline. And back when I talked about stress and your cortisol goes high, often what can happen is adrenaline goes high too, your fight and flight hormone. And it'll persist in being high even after your cortisol is depleted. It might even be worse. And the natural balancing hormone to adrenaline is progesterone. Now, what does that look like? What I presented at the conference was Dr. Michael Platt's book called Adrenaline. Adrenaline can be very nice. It can give us that high that we're looking for when we participate in dangerous sports. It makes us creative, which is lovely. It can make us feel good. However, in excess, the symptoms are ADD, ADHD, that kind of thing. And we have even adult people still taking drugs like Ritalin to try to allow them to function, and what they're really missing is that natural hormone to put the brake on adrenaline, which is progesterone. So you can intervene with a young child when they're stressed and they don't have enough progesterone. And before you take them to your pediatrician and put them on a lifetime of drugs, wouldn't it be a good idea to take a look at what's going on with the hormones and make sure that the balance can be there? So just like the magic with the flu and hydrocortisone, progesterone produces that magic in a hyperactive child, would calm them down in 20, 30 minutes.
You know, it's interesting about that flu thing. I was thinking about some patients that have chronic fatigue syndrome, and they have flu-like symptoms all the time, and they just talked about this. I don't know. I was listening to another radio program. They talked about that there's some issues with the immune system and hormones with chronic fatigue syndrome. I think it was the NIH did some work on it, too, which we've known in natural medicine for years, which I kind of stumbled when I heard it. But that might be interesting. It might really help people with a lot of pain. The 1% hydrocortisone. And it's not enough to, that's not enough to stymie the adrenals, though, right, to kind of send a feedback loop and shut the adrenals down. That's always a problem with hormones that I don't know if my training's adequate, but that I'm always thinking is, like, if I give a hormone, does that make the body lazy?
Well, in the case of some of the synthetic molecules that we made to mimic hydrocortisone is where we really got into problem. The very first therapies for things like arthritis, very, very inflammatory condition, was to use hydrocortisone. But we used it with bullions, let's say.
Yeah.
Really used a lot, and then quickly following that discovery, drug companies started altering molecules, which would give you an even bigger hit. And so they rapidly switched to drugs like prednisone, which is pretty common, dexamethasone, triamcinolone, many, many of these analogs for hydrocortisone, but they tend to be too strong. And when your body's faced with that much unrelenting strength of a molecule sitting in those receptors, it is going to turn itself down and even off in the case of the adrenals. So Medical practitioners know that if they put a patient on this, they're going to see results. So you're going to get those anti-inflammatory results. But if that person isn't carefully tapered off and just stops suddenly, they have even produced deaths because the adrenal gland was not functioning and hasn't had enough time to function before the person dies. So it's a very serious issue. And we really need to get back to treating the body the way it should normally work. And it's quite remarkable. I think about this a lot. I'm so lucky to live in a time where we can put replenish hormones. We have the means to replenish hormones that are the exact duplicate of the hormones our body makes. And like we're talking about testing, you can test pre and post to make sure that you're in that Goldilocks area and not too high, not too low. And more importantly, it's so much fun because the person tells you what disappears, how much better they are. They've got their life back. It's such an exciting practice to be in.
Yeah, and I think in the old days, the ancient Chinese and Ayurvedic doctors, they would do like the gland of the animals, and so they were kind of on the right track, knowing that. But the problem was the dosing and all kinds of things was all over the place. I think that we're definitely entered a new age of understanding these hormones.
Ayurvedic people know to use urine for hormones. Chinese know to use urine for hormones.
Mm.
We excrete our hormones in the urine. In fact, that's one of the ways you can test for them is collect a urine sample and see if the hormones are there. The Chinese, 5,000 years ago, collected urine from young people, had it dried out, and made it into little tablets for the emperor and the court.
Wow, that is brilliant. I'm going to add that to one of my lectures on Chinese medicine. Yeah. So, great, Carol. Well, is there anything you'd like? We got the two-minute warning. So is there any... let's talk about you do your radio show. People can contact you there, and if they have any questions, how can they contact you if they have any particular questions on the program today?
Okay, I would love to take questions, and my email is carol@womensinternational.com. And womensinternational.com is the website for Women's International Pharmacy where I work.
But it's also for men, too.
Yes.
To say that. Okay.
Yeah, you know, we started with PMS, and then as more and more hormones became available, we used more. And they, of course, are suitable for both men and women.
And what time is your BAI show on?
It airs on Saturdays between 2 and 3 p.m.
Great. Wow. Well, thanks, Carol Peterson. I appreciate so much wisdom packed into an hour. This is going to be mandatory listening for my naturopathic students.
Oh,
and I look forward to contacting you soon and having you on again, and maybe vice versa.
Okay. And vice versa, too, for sure. Thank you, Dr. Z.
Okay, have a great one. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Wishing you the best. Stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.